Welcome to another episode of the Major Outcomes podcast. My name is Johannes and I'm CEO and co-founder of WorkPath. And today I'm talking with Christina Poppa. She is a partner, actually the first female partner at the consultancy firm Consistency, where she joined in 2015. And today we will talk a lot about leadership and psychology because that's where she works at the interface of management digitization in bigger companies, particularly in the energy sector. And what does that mean from a leadership and a psychology point of view? I think it's quite impressive because in parallel, Christina is also not just a partner at Consistency, but a CEO at the tech startup Contractuo. We will talk about that in a moment. And with that, a very warm welcome, Christina. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Johannes. Nice to be here.
So, as part of the introduction, I hope I didn't forget anything important. What brought you into that space? What brought you into working at the interface of leadership and psychology? Maybe you can give us some background around, how did you get there?
It was quite a ride and quite a journey to get there. So I'm working since 17 years in different industries, and especially the last 8 years working in consultancy, management consultants jobs, I was very often confronted with huge transformation programs, often triggered by new technology, digitization. And I found out quite often it was not the technology that maybe made it difficult to achieve a new state, a better future state, but it was the people behind that technology. And very often also on the leadership level, it already started to get complicated. So that brought me somehow into the direction in the field of psychology.
That resonates strongly. I think that's something we talk a lot about here in the Major Outcomes podcast as well, right? The transformation of our economy and our working world is not primarily just a process or data or technology challenge, but it's an organizational challenge. It's a question of management innovation, or you could even look at management as a technology. And in the end, that's always a people topic. So it's great to dive a little bit deeper into that. I think also in some of the previous episodes, we were sort of like talking along that interface and making sure not just to talk about technology as a solution, but how do we integrate technology, tools, systems with change on the people side, change from a psychological point of view. So that's really exciting. Maybe another question, because I mentioned that you are in that, like, you have probably multiple hats that you're wearing, but you also are in a leadership role at a startup. How do you manage that? Like, how did you get into that situation and how do you manage both of those certainly demanding roles?
Yeah, it was also quite a ride and quite a journey to get there. So as I already shared with you, I'm quite keen into psychology, but also into new technologies. And so since several years, I'm supporting, let's say, pro bono, so in the background, startups that need a bit help. And I wanted to understand more why small companies that have great technologies, great idea, that can really help us to improve situations, why they struggle to get to the market. So that led me to Contractuo, because at Contractuo we have a great technology and a great team. I mean, I think last year we were 10 people with 7 nationalities, quite a mixed culture. And so it was curiosity and also my belief that we can do things better as we do right now. And sometimes, we need also to trust smaller companies.
And how do you structure that? Do you have 2 days here, 3 days there, or how do you manage your time?
Actually like this. It's all about it sounds boring, but it's all about very strict discipline. And this means also that I make very transparent to both companies, but also the clients behind those companies, when I am available, when not. Uh-huh. and also setting clear goals for myself and sharing them also again, or actually creating them together with the partners at Consistency and the found team and the team at Contracto, and in a couple of cases, even together with my clients. So very clear goals, very clear roadmap and clear discipline.
And as it sounds, certainly synergies between those two worlds or those two roles as well. So if we move to or shift our focus from the startup to the consultancy, Consistency, where you are a partner, what kind of companies do you mainly work with, and what kind of challenges do you support them with?
So we are mainly working since 2008 in the utility industry, like supporting every kind of company, actually. So no matter which role you now would pick from this energy market, we support them in very different fields. So really from the core, like supporting them in order to improve their processes, like really with core industrial knowledge or industry knowledge, but also in with regards to run great, huge digital transformation programs. But our heart, you know, beats higher when we are very close to energy transition projects, like everything that is reshaping our way, how we use, how we create, how we generate energy. Yeah. So the utility industry is definitely one of our core industry. But next to that, we're also in the automotive, fast moving consumer goods, finance, logistics. So quite a broad mixture of clients.
And oftentimes also when you're browsing your website or following your work a bit, it seems to be about big transformations, big change. And maybe we're now going towards a topic of leadership and leadership styles. Like, what do you experience there? Maybe we can start with energy sector as an example. Mm-hmm. Like, what kind of transformation is needed? What are the big themes there? And what role does leadership play, right? Is there like a clear pattern of existing leadership styles that might struggle with where things are moving and have to move? Mm-hmm. How do those two things connect?
Yeah. So I would say there are patterns across the industry. Mm-hmm. I will come to them in a bit. What I actually perceive quite hard is that those patterns are changing. Yeah, so looking back into maybe 2015 when I started, what I perceived there quite heavily were leadership styles that were more, let's say, in this command control dimension, more maybe in along the line in the direction of pace setting. So this was, let's say, a prevalent leadership style that I was confronted with back then. It was not really, let's say, innovative, disruptive, because there was not really the need to. So the whole industry, let's say 10 years from now, so the past 10 years, so let's just phrase like this, mm-hmm. Or over the last, let's say, 5 decades, they not really had the urge to change something. Yeah. But we all know, and we experienced also last year, that there is no longer time to rest, time to maintain and to keep. Now it's a time to really go from top to bottom and redefine business models. So the redefining the business models is, of course, one of the key topics there. But also understanding how they are running their processes. Yeah. Imagine those huge companies have also quite complex processes. And when we talk about cost to serve, or when we talk about lean processes, customer satisfaction, those topics are getting quite difficult if you have such a heavy environment. So decreasing the complexity is, I would say, next to reinventing some business models or creating new, definitely decreasing the complexity, having more standardization for standard processes. And last but not least, also being brave and just really start some new smaller projects and allow also the employees exploring more, work more with new partners, even smaller companies, especially in the energy transition. There are so many startups that are creating quite impressive technologies, but also hardware So yeah, there are quite a lot of topics, to be fair.
Yeah, but some, like, I think big themes that also are big in other industries, right? What you're describing and how I understand it is like, it's not winning in this industry is not about just efficiency and cost control and better margins through cost cutting and protecting market share, like remaining in a position of power, but it's also about innovating, like how does new value add, how does new growth look like in a very different setup now that you at least hinted at, and also a shift away from, like, there is an existing structure, an existing business model, and it's just about optimizing within that, but really maybe changing more towards an ecosystem approach where you open up as a platform, you consider your company a platform. And I think, yeah, some themes you mentioned it. Last year, there were some big disruptions that probably had a particularly strong impact on that industry, but nothing that sounds like it's very particularly just to the industry sector. If we talk about leadership styles, and I think if people follow your work, you talk about different leadership styles, and I think you use certain models for that. How do you look at it from a leadership styles perspective? Mm-hmm. What has to change there to make the kind of change that you described work better?
So what kind of change we have to make in the leadership styles is?
Yeah. Like, I think,
okay,
in one of the previous conversations, we talked about like different leadership styles, different leadership models, and what's the shift you see there and what might be challenges in that shift?
So I actually see a huge shift needed in some areas because reinventing existing business models open up to, let's say, more economy, more ecosystem thinking. Getting rid of all processes needs people who are brave, who are also, let's say, brave enough to make transparent what they were holding back, maybe for quite a time. It means also that you have to have the capacity to also think a bit more in visionary setting, like, and some people maybe were never trained to get creative, to think about those, let's say, new things that has to happen. And in case you don't have it, then you at least have to admit it and then collect the people around you that have the skill and have the ambition. So I think those are, if you, for example, pick from Daniel Goleman, he's an author, psychologist, and I think he wrote for New York Times over 12 years, different reports on behavior. Mm-hmm. He likes to, on the topic of emotional intelligence, to refer to six different leadership styles, from, let's say, commanding, pace setting, to more democratic and affiliative, to visionary and a more coaching leadership style. And I think this is the range. So we have to be able as a leader nowadays to maybe use more than just one or two styles to be able to also understand in which particular situation which leadership style is now needed. Because sometimes, again, you have to command, to say, okay, we now decide we will go now on this path, we will follow this path, even if it will be hard. Then you have to have some kind of a very visionary ability to increase participation, good communication skills, but also the ability to set goals that are inspiring people, that are motivating people to get their ass off and change something.
So you just mentioned it, setting goals. Goal setting is obviously a very important part of being a leader, being a manager. You in your practice, but also, of course, we at WorkPath, our customers, a lot of stakeholders, I would say most stakeholders in our ecosystem, work with OKRs as a goal setting approach, as a framework for a more outcome-centered way of defining goals, but then also collaborating around goals, pursuing goals, achieving goals. How do you look at OKRs and where do you see the connections, right? Because I think OKRs, how how we look at it is oftentimes at the intersection of being a management approach, being a management and a goal setting framework, but also it can be a transformation framework, and it can be used to also reflect on and change management and leadership styles. How do you look at that?
I'm quite often asked the question, do you think that OKRs can change leadership style, or do you have to have one particular leadership style in order to be able to apply the whole mindset, the whole idea behind OKRs? I think now comes a very consultant's typical question answer. Depends. Yeah, it heavily depends on the person who's sitting in front of me. So, however, there are a couple of leadership styles when you see them more, present in the behavior of a person. So, for example, for a person who tends to be more command control, more in this direction, acting, maybe those people will have difficulties in applying the OKR method, because you know that, yeah, it's all about top down, bottom up. It's all about participation. It's all about listening to the people who are actually doing the work, yeah, that's creating those results, that creating those outcome, and in ideally also impact. So allowing this dialogue, allowing also to, yeah, maybe that the people are challenging your goals you have set for them, is something that can be very challenging for people who tend to apply a more commanding leadership style. On the other hand, I think people who have a very visionary leadership style, they can benefit a lot from that. Why? Because sometimes what I experienced in my projects in the last, let's say, 17 years, in different roles, like being the person who lead or who has been led, or the person who's coaching the leadership person, I realized that very visionary people sometimes struggle to make things precise, to build the bridge from the vision to the real, through the, say, tactical layer, and then to really get things started. And the OKR method is very beneficial in order to get this breakdown quite easily. Even maybe it feels difficult in the first one or two cycles or one or two first attempts. It's like everything what once is easy today was maybe once back then hard. So, yeah. So depending on the leadership style you see or you more live, you can have quite easily the benefits right from the start, or you really have also to challenge and question yourself. Do I'm able to really lift this method, or do I'm burning this?
That makes a lot of sense. I think there are at least two things in your answer that I really like and I would like to go into, because on the one hand, you describe a methodology like OKRs as a change management tool as well. And you, for me, emphasize how important it is to how you position it, right? It's not like a tool, a methodology you just follow, but if you're not religious about the methodology, but understand it like a methodology like OKRs, it's a set of principles, how you want to work together, then you can really use this for an ongoing conversation in the company. Why are certain teams, why are certain managers, why might it be difficult? So from both directions, right? So the way also we describe OKRs oftentimes, it's a perfect combination of leadership and management, of addressing both sides of the brain, right? Defining really good objectives, really good outcomes that define like a customer and a value add. Like that's qualitative, that's about finding purpose in your work, that's about having people connect with the work. That's more about leadership, it's about vision, it's about value add, it's about direction. Yeah. But that is always like complemented by really specific and measurable and actionable early indicators, metrics, key results that make it specific and tangible, that let it break you down, like how do we define or how do we measure if we actually achieve that value add and if we achieve these outcomes. So I really liked how you showed that depending on your leadership style, it can be in different scenarios be a complementary tool that supports you on the one hand, on the other hand also just a conversation framework and a critical thinking framework where if you understand it as a change management tool, using the like regular reviews or retrospectives and understand, okay, why are we struggling here? Mm-hmm. If you sort of like not think of it as in a binary way, you do it or you don't do it, it works and it doesn't, but actually focusing on the learning, why things might not work that well, then it can be really something that is an ongoing, not just reflection, but change tool. I mean, if you really want to allow people to change and enable them to change, that's obviously after decades, as you said, in a certain mode, in a certain style, in a certain culture, in a company, nothing that happens overnight. And I think that, yeah, the way you put that, it really shows that it can be a psychological tool, if you like, even. But it strongly depends on how you implement it and how it is perceived in the leadership team. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, as business,
feel free to disagree.
As business psychologist, I maybe would not phrase it like one to one like this, because I would not really call it a psychology tool. But I definitely agree. OKRs can trigger a change process that has really a huge impact on an organization. And I experience this with every time, again and again. And actually, this is something that is quite often underestimated, that this a change that it triggers. So when you're implementing OKRs, you're implementing also, depending on the company, new ways of working, new ways of communication, new ways of thinking. And yeah, so I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about like common pitfalls, and at one or two we already scratched on them. One thing you mentioned was that, or at least how I understood this, right? OKRs and new ways of leadership are also about empowering teams to mm-hmm. define goals. It's more about not just top down, but also bottom up. It's, I think what I experience in many scenarios is that, particularly in middle management, you have leaders, you have managers who might ask themselves, like, okay, but what am I doing then if now suddenly the team does that, right? Mm-hmm. So self-organization and autonomy, those kind of things actually question the role of managers in a traditional way sometimes. And mm-hmm. I think one thing we oftentimes experience is like you have to take the fear out of that mm-hmm. and you have to show managers, no matter what level, like, what's your new role, or how does the role change and develop? How can you become more of a facilitator, coach? And there we are back again at like different styles of leadership. I imagine that to be a major pitfall. What are the common pitfalls you experience if you want to implement a new operating model, a new leadership style, a new strategy execution approach? We can take an example of OKRs, but I think mm-hmm. also with other methodologies in a similar context, it's oftentimes about that. Like, what are pitfalls you experience?
I think a very common pitfall is that when you maybe from the top or middle management decide to introduce something, that you underestimate how much yourself maybe has to change and mm-hmm. you have to adopt. And this self-reflection, you know, I think it's crucial, because if you're just introducing something and you're expecting from your employees, your teams to change, but yourself, you remain the same, then it's not really, ideal. So underestimating the fact that it starts with yourself and being a role model is one common pitfall. Example from one of my clients. I asked them, hey, okay, the teams are developing now the OKR set. What about the management team? What about your OKR sets? I think you also should make your goals transparent, your agenda transparent. Yeah, what is measured by end of the year? And this was like something, yeah, you're sure that we have to do that? And this was, I think, very good example of underestimating what means being a role model. and being flying.
I think it's ironic. On the one hand, as someone in a leadership role myself, I empathize with that. But at the same time, it's ironic how much we talk about change management and how long it takes to make this kind of change happen. But then in reality, if you introduce something like that, let's say you introduce OKRs as a new operating model, as a new approach to defining and executing, collaborating around your strategy, you invest a lot in that change, right? And then for a leadership team, sometimes it's like 30-minute slot here, and an hour slot there, and you get some slides, you get some e-learning. Like, of course, when you are in a leadership role, you from an intellectual point of view, you obviously get that. It's simple, but I think it's a huge step from understanding it to really living and breathing. And as I said, from my own personal experience, I empathize with that. But it's something where I oftentimes see, and that's why I strongly agree, leadership teams underinvesting actually in how do we get support, and are we realistic how long this will take us, how long this will take us to make it work. Because if we're honest, as a leadership team here, we've been successful based on very different principles, very different leadership styles the last 20 years. Those styles got us here, and now suddenly these styles won't get us to the next level. Some cases they might be even part of the problem now. So that resonates strongly. Yeah. Any other or further pitfalls that you experience in your work like that?
Yeah, they are actually quite some. So another pitfall is, I think, especially for people who tend to be very, let's say, harmony driven. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they like to have everything balanced and not really discussions. When you, for example, introducing a change like this, yeah, let's say we use OKR as an example, then you have to be ready that not everybody will be happy about this, yeah, because not everybody is just waiting for the next change. In most of the situation, people are already tired of change, and this of course can impact harmony. And you have to understand, is it worth to impact it? How big is the impact? Is this just a price to pay in order to get to the next level, in order to become even happier, more efficient, or more successful? And everybody has to understand, has to identify for themselves what means successful. But not expecting that everybody will be like, hey, yay, but more being ready to understand that there will be a couple of people who will not be happy, and understanding early enough how you identify those people and how you manage this, how you still get them on board, and building the relationship, building the trust that they will not be forgotten along the way. So this is a second very common pitfall, I would say.
Yeah, and again, it's about giving context there, right? Not just this is to be expected, but oftentimes I feel like we're like these magic moments, that transformative moments happen, is when teams and organizations understand, like, by design, this had to happen, that this is an obvious conflict, like we're changing something and this had to be a disruption, this had to be a strong intervention. Like, why is that? And then how do we manage that transition now? So I think it's a lot about providing the context, and about explaining why that happens, and then also explaining why the change initially, explaining why the change has to happen. How important, particularly when we talk about leadership styles and culture, how important is it in your work to like define, or maybe also draw a contrast, like that's our existing leadership style, and then that's leadership styles we embrace in the future? Because you could do both potentially, right? You could just introduce new methodologies, new approaches, and then sort of like through those communicate, and through those show what you expect from teams and employees in general, from leaders. Or you can sort of like paint a very clear picture of how does leadership in the future look like? What do we expect? How do you do that in your work?
So also depends quite hard on what kind of leadership team I deal with. But in general, what I do is to make it transparent. So on the one hand, based on my experience, what situation they can expect that will happen, and ask them clearly, okay, how would you right now, with the way how you lead, respond to that? So this is something that I would definitely do, but also asking them, what do you think? Where you maybe have to adapt your way how you manage and how you lead, because still different things, yep. Managing and leading somehow, at least for me. So yes, I definitely draw very clear pictures. So for example, with regards now to goal setting and a more participative process around this goal setting, I clearly also show this command and control time is over. Micromanagement is over. Yeah. So this can't continue one-to-one, because it will definitely kill the motivation. It will not build engaged teams, because it's just, you know, why should I as a team member change something if the person who's leading me still is doing the same thing, still is micromanaging me, still is, you know, when I have an idea, is bullishing me because my idea is maybe not that great, or just a different idea than from the leadership person itself.
Makes sense. So I'm looking at the time.
Yeah, I know. We are running out of time, right?
Are we, like, I think we would fit. I mean, we addressed two and a half common pitfalls and how to address them. Do we have one more top of mind? We would put that probably in.
Let's see. I think a very also common pitfall is to think from now, 1 or 2 years later. So talking about the outcome we want to achieve by everything we do on the short, middle, and long-term perspective. Why I say this? Because maybe, and also aligning this, maybe when we're both implementing a new technology or a new way of working, you will follow you have different motivation in doing that. And while we align on the first line, we are aligned because we're saying, yeah, we want to do that, but we have different motivation, different ideas where this should lead us. Then what will happen throughout this process, we will maybe go in different direction. Then we wonder what happened. Yeah. So having a very clear picture of a state in the future we want to achieve.
And then I guess also here, being realistic, right?
Yeah.
Nothing in a big organization happens in 1, 2, 3 quarters. And you have to think about those different horizons. What I always see oftentimes, that's the common quote. You overestimate what you can achieve in a year and underestimate what you can achieve in 3 years. So very much agree there as well. Okay, so as always, with all guests on the Major Outcomes podcast, we asked some closing questions, some recommendations, and I will start with books that you recently read that might be relevant for this topic, for our audience, that we would like to recommend. And then, as always, we put them into the show notes of this episode.
Okay, so there are so many books. I mean, you see a couple of them in my bag. Classical Measure What Matters. I think you have to just say it when you talk about goal setting. Even it's a very old book, Emotional Intelligence from Daniel Goleman. I think it's from 1995, but the recent version. Then a more, let's say, a bit of management, more US style book, but it has a couple of things in it. It's Thinking Slow, Thinking Fast. So the classical ones, I would say. And I have still a long list, which I also can share with you, that you can put them in a show notes, so to not use our time to...
That sounds great. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Any podcasts that you listen to, favorite podcasts you would recommend?
There are also a couple of them. There are some that are more industry related. I don't know if they're really interesting, but I also can show them, share them with you afterwards. I listen to a psychology podcast. Of course, I listen sometimes to your podcast, but I would not quote one specific one right now, actually.
Okay.
Because there are too many, so I really have to understand to think about which one would make sense to share here.
Happy to, no, as you said, happy to put your list into the show notes afterwards.
Promise.
Then how can, if someone in the audience wants to engage with you or learn more about your work, what do they have to do?
Write me an email. No, actually, I think the most lean way is just contact me via LinkedIn.
Yeah.
It's just that. And keep it short, keep it simple. What do you want from me? And what maybe you can offer me? Would be also nice to understand that.
And maybe a good spot for some promotional content here. You'll also be at the Outcome Economy Summit on April 20th, right?
That's right. I'm looking forward.
So
the keynote there.
We put a link on this again as well in the show notes. This is where you can meet Christina if you're interested. Then last but not least, like in your industry, in the context of your work, who are people you really admire? Do you have role models? Do you have experts? Maybe someone you would recommend that we should invite to the Major Outcomes podcast?
Yeah, so there are a couple of them. So one person I really admire is Christian Hertfeller, actually. He is, on the one hand, my mentor. And I'm his mentor. So we're doing this vice versa. Why I admire him, because he has a deep knowledge on the utility industry. I learned so much from him the last years, and he's never tired to learn more. So he's really a person who digs deep into a topic, and I'm always admire people who are very keen to learn something by heart. This is why I admire him. And he has a leadership style that is just something that I would like to see more in the world. No.
That does sound great, and we'll put him on the list. Thank you very much. And that was it. Christina, thank you very much. Thank you for being on the podcast today. Again, looking forward to meet you at the Outcome Economy Summit on April 20th, and then hope to continue the conversation there. Thanks.
Looking forward. Thank you, Johannes.
Thanks for tuning in today. If you found this episode valuable, please subscribe to the Major Outcomes podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or any other major platform you might be using. Also, we'd be excited if you'd leave us a review. This helps us grow the community and spread the outcome mindset. See you on the next episode.